Caller here. Purple Insider is a must if you pay any attention to the purple. Purpleinsider.football is the best way to get it. Matthew joins us as always here Friday about this time. Thank you, sir. Prime example of why people should make sure they pay attention to everything you offer up was your insightful conversation you had with Kevin O'Connell. I think that was about a week ago, where the head coach gave you some time. That's not an automatic, by the way, on a Friday for a head coach to give media time. He did. And you wrote about a lot of things, including what we see a lot and what he's trying to impress upon the players when he's speaking to them for about 3-4 minutes after win. These clearly have gone viral. He has a skill set to it. I thought it was interesting what is just coming natural for him, what is planned, what message he's trying to send, how the players are reacting to it. So twofold, just what stood out most to you in your conversation with the head coach, and then that part when it's the game balls and it's that immediate interaction with his team.
Yeah, and you're right that a independent journalist sitting down one-on-one with the head coach in the NFL is very unusual.
Yep.
So I give Vikings PR and Kevin O'Connell a lot of credit for giving me that time to write this story. But, yeah, you know, I learned, number one, is that Kevin O'Connell does absolutely zero preparation on those speeches. So he's like Eminem in 8 Mile. He's out there freestyling completely. And I think that that's what everybody, the players, the fans, Kevin O'Connell's own wife, my wife, who inspired the story, what everybody loves about those is that it feels authentic. And that was the word that kept coming up from the players, because I asked 4 or 5 players about the speeches and game ball ceremony, and they said that they were like, that's who he is. What you're seeing is not some act he puts on for the cameras. In fact, I think that he's a little uncomfortable at times about them going viral, and then he gets asked about them in media sessions and stuff. Hey, coach, you said after the game this or that or the other thing. I don't think he likes that very much. But what Brian O'Neill told me is that every single day that they're around Kevin O'Connell, that's how it is. That's the message. It's a message of I believed in this team from day one, and I think, you know, his message is also going over easier because they're winning a lot and it's paying off. From the beginning of the year, he told this team, what Vegas thinks of you, what the outside world thinks of you is wrong, and we're going to prove it wrong. And that could fall a little bit hollow if he didn't believe it. But I think now that it started to happen, they're buying into it very much. So I think you see the enthusiasm, the passion, the genuineness of Kevin O'Connell, which is the reason why players talk about his culture, his communication all the time. I think that he is probably the best coach in the entire league at communicating with his players. And I just felt like those speeches were a window into why they seem to have guys overachieve here, why guys want to sign here, why they want to stay here, and why they buy into Kevin O'Connell.
Well, let me add this, too. It's also a testament to your work and the respect O'Connell has for your work, why they sat down with an independent journalist, because they won't do that with most. They know your pedigree in this area, and it's richly deserved. Are you surprised at all that the Wolves said at the start of the year, we're not going to deal with contracts at all? And do you think that's going to change in any way for either him or Kwesi, when at least so far, this has been a very good season?
Yeah, I think that if the Wolves could go back in time, they would negotiate that contract then, because if this team wins 12 games and a playoff game, then Kevin O'Connell gets to write his own blank check, I think, for achieving as much as he did, for proving that, you know, hey, like, he won with Kirk Cousins to some extent, but it's not like Kirk Cousins had never done anything before. This is a quarterback who truly has never done anything before in Sam Darnold. And now, I know last week was rocky, but he's 7-2. He's got some of the best stats in the NFL, and he's gotten a heck of a lot out of that. Plus, you know, the decision to hire Brian Flores is one of the best, I would say, the franchise has ever made. to have that, you know, top defense as well. And that goes back to O'Connell, goes back to Kwesi. Kwesi's the one who hired Kevin O'Connell and believed in his vision for this team and the culture that he could create. So I think that, you know, we look around the league, they're playing the Titans. Is any team a bigger laughingstock joke show than the Tennessee Titans? And they fired a coach who had been good with them. And when you get one of these guys, you want to make sure that you've got that person for a long period of time. So, but I also understand from the Wills perspective, their contracts were not up. This isn't a lame duck year. And I think that that wasn't talked about maybe enough when they said they weren't negotiating an extension. It's like, well, they usually don't anyway until the year before the final year that they're going into. So I think that was a factor. And I also think that they wanted to see it as a little bit of a test case. Like, how do they do with Sam Darnold? How do they do? Like, remember, from the Wills' perspective, from our perspective, we're like, hey, they're going in the right direction. Why would you want to put pressure on these guys? From their perspective, they wrote a ton of checks this offseason.
Yes, they did.
Darisaw, Jefferson, Van Ginkle, Grenard. Like, they spent a lot of money. So I'm sure they were saying, let's see how you work with this, and then we'll evaluate from there, which I totally understand.
Plus the dead money, right? The money that is still on the cap and those guys are no longer here, and the impact of those salaries. Matthew Collar's with us. You know what stood out to me, Matthew, in the last hour or so when I looked at the Vikings injury list? And here's the injury list. I'm done. You know, you're this far in the season, and obviously there are guys who are playing in discomfort and have things. But a lot of teams have four or five starters out. They're not facing that. So just talk about how fortunate they are. And then the most notable injury news this week was J.J. McCarthy and a follow-up procedure. To me, it seemed like much ado about nothing that you see a lot of these follow-up procedures when you have that elaborate of a surgery. Do you agree with me on that one? Should people just calm down before they're overreacting to McCarthy going under the knife in some sort of manner again?
So when it comes to the rehabilitation process, I've talked to multiple players about this, and every one of them says that the way that the Vikings are doing things now, they have complete trust in that. So I think when O'Connell, and you look at Hockenson and the way he's come back, Brian O'Neill from the Achilles and the way he came back, and they said the same thing. As far as everyone that I've seen talk about this with more knowledge than me, not a doctor, it sounds like it is a very typical type of thing when you get some swelling after a meniscus. I also understand that if you are a Minnesota Vikings fan and you hear the word knee and procedure, you probably lose your mind because of the number of it's not just Bridgewater and Culpepper. It's also Sharif Floyd, a first-round pick who was promising that it had a meniscus, and they botched the surgery. But it doesn't sound like it's anything like this. Seems like he's completely on track, and that should be fine. But I think when we talk about the players' trust for O'Connell, it is underrated how much Tyler Williams plays into that. I don't know if he goes by trainer, but that's what they used to call that position.
It's some fancier title, guaranteed, right?
Right, right. I don't know. It's the director of sports science and football and something, but he is such a major part of the trust of the players and the coach and the trainer because their health is paramount. And you also have the other thing too is everybody wants young teams. Everybody wants draft picks. Oh, we want to get younger, 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 younger. When you have Harrison Smith, Stephon Gilmore, Jonathan Grenard, Andrew Van Ginkle, these guys know how to manage their bodies through a season. Aaron Jones, I mean, he's done this for many years, and those guys know how to stay on the field. That's why they're pros, and that's why they're Pro Bowlers. And I think that is another underrated factor of this team is that they have so many veteran players that know how to stay out there that they are able to bring a lot of value. And even Blake Cashman working his way back quickly, he was a monster last week. Those guys being on the field can make Flores' defense what it is.
Speaking of running backs, I want to talk about potentially the return of the importance of running backs this year. And also, are the Vikings playing the most anonymous team in football in the Tennessee Titans? More with Matthew Collar in moments on CCO. Right back with the czar of Purple Insider, Matthew Collar, PurpleInsider.football, mailbag today, stories, the great profile on Kevin O'Connell, podcasts, plenty of video, plenty of analysis during Sunday's game, right after Sunday's game. It is worth your time, Purple Insider. Check it out. Brad Lane made this point to me at the top of the hour. You know, you look at running backs the last 3-4 years, people were saying, come on, don't waste top picks. You know, you're going to get as good a running back in the third and fourth round, and it's a quarterback league. And, yes, it still is a quarterback league. But look at this team. Look at how essential Aaron Jones is. Look at how vital Derrick Henry has been. Look at the Lions with their dual running backs and how important they are to helping out Jared Goff. Do you think this year has been a bit of a resurgence in key running backs and reminding folks how essential they still are?
Well, first of all, tell Brad Lane to stick to baseball. We all know that's his that's his.
Stay
real
in your lane, Lane. Come on, go go program. You know,
coach some little league or something. This is one of the most fascinating subjects to me in the NFL because I feel like we went back in time. Is this the 90s again? Where's Thurman Thomas? Where's where's Emmitt Smith and Barry Sanders? Something interesting. I have been asking everyone I can about this, and someone in the league, if that makes me sound important, said
that's always a good reference.
There's two things. Number one is that the running backs got so cheap that how could you not?
Yeah.
What would you get for an offensive tackle for $7 million? Is that like a backup? I mean, but you get Aaron Jones for $7 million. You might as well, even if the guy only plays 12 games, that's worth a heck of a lot more than a third caliber cornerback or something like that. So that's part one. Part two is that we are reaching a point where no guy who is 28 or 29 years old has been just the 350 carry a year, Eddie George, Sean Alexander, run these guys into the ground and then they're done. I mean, Aaron Jones, his entire career has been part of a running back duo where teams have been very cautious. Even I know that fans in Atlanta are upset that Tyler Allgeier is getting carries along with Bijan Robinson or that David Montgomery gets carries with Jahmyr Gibbs. They want those guys to be good for whole seasons, for many years to come. And I think what you're seeing is some of these guys do get to this point. They take care of their bodies better than they ever have. But there's also way, way less mileage than when Chris Johnson was running 400 times for 2,000 yards or even Adrian Peterson kind of beat the age curve a little bit. But look how many carries he was getting, 350 a year. You're just never going to see that again. So I think that plays into it. Both of those things. And then this was also a kind of a unique group, right? Like the age curve did come for Ezekiel Elliott. It did come for Dalvin Cook. So, Joe Mixon and, Aaron Jones having it not be the case, that still half of the running backs that were really good from that draft class fell off at that same age. So I'm not sure that this small sample proves something, but I do think that with deep safeties being played, everyone trying to make sure they're not giving up explosive passes, that the value of having those guys, especially if they're versatile like Aaron Jones is, it does increase in value from what we've thought of it before.
Okay, let's talk about the opponent, the Tennessee Titans.
Do we have to?
We're not going to spend a lot of time, but kind of the point is, honestly, like you said, a few years ago with Vrabel and some of the weapons they had, you thought, man, this is a good team. Now, okay, I pay pretty close attention. I got to remind myself, Brian Callahan's their head coach. And Will Levis, I know he hasn't been around for 4 or 5 years, but does anybody really think he's going to be a star quarterback? I don't think anybody does. I know there are some very impressive defensive numbers, but on the point side, they're not that impressive. So nothing really dramatically stands out. If Tennessee wins this game on Sunday, what would they need to do?
Number one, the thing to be most concerned about is Jeffrey Simmons and the interior of the defensive line. They also drafted a guy, Tavondre Sweat, who is kind of lives up to that name. He's like a big, giant, sweaty guy. But that's the problems that they've had before. It feels like if the Vikings are going to make a change at right guard, it's now, because I don't know that their right guard can hold up against these guys. So I'll be curious if they decide to potentially make a change and put in Dalton Risner, which we've all been asking for weeks. But it was a really rough game at right guard last week, so I'll be curious about that. That's it, though. That's my whole answer. I mean, Will Levis, Will Levis, he played pretty well last week against a good Chargers defense.
He was sacked seven times, though, right?
Right. That's the thing, is that he takes sacks. I don't think he's very good at the line of scrimmage and identifying stuff. That was a huge criticism of him coming out, is that he just didn't really run the offense very smartly or wasn't able to identify things. And I think for Brian Flores, that's going to be, he's got to be very excited to see someone like Will Levis the same way he was last week against Mac Jones. But it's really, I think we all know what it is, right? If Sam Darnold throws three picks and takes sacks and they shut down the run with those big guys, then there's always a chance that the game could stay close. They have enough talent. They're just a disaster as an entire franchise.
Well, it's a reminder that, and I get it, sometimes a coach runs his course and they made a move on Vrabel. I still don't understand why Vrabel didn't land a job this offseason.
I don't really understand that either, because everybody wants to hire the kind of, sexy name coach, I guess. I mean, sometimes that works. I guess that was Kevin O'Connell at one point.
Right.
But, I think
he's not an offensive darling, right? He's more traditional tough guy, defensive-minded coach. But by the way, Dan Campbell is a tough-minded guy. He's worked out pretty well in Detroit.
Right. No, you're right. And there's no one way to do it. But
no,
I also think, too, I mean, when you let go two of the best players in the NFL, what do you think is going to happen, right? I mean, the A.J. Brown trade got their general manager fired, and it should have. That's just one of the worst trades you'll ever see, rather than paying an elite receiver. And that's why every time someone would bring up, hey, should we trade Justin Jefferson? The answer is no. As loud as I possibly can, no, because you see what happened with the Titans. But I think that they have many issues organizationally, from their management to their ownership to they hired a coach who I'm not sure was really prepared for this. And then, I mean, they can't even cover a punt. Like, this is the worst special teams maybe of all time. So there is no bigger disparity in the NFL this week in coaching than Vikings versus Titans.
Okay. Tonight on Netflix, 58-year-old Mike Tyson is facing Jake Paul. You're probably going to be home. I'm guessing you have Netflix. I know you're younger than me, but was Mike Tyson ever a thing for you? And does this appeal to you in any way tonight?
Okay, so yes, he was a thing for me, like as a little kid. But when you're just starting to really love sports, he's one of the biggest names in sports as I was growing up.
Enormous
and
name.
I saw. Right, and I think that maybe we weren't as far along in concussion understanding at the time. And so my dad and I would watch boxing, and I remember as a little kid watching Mike Tyson knock people out in like 2 seconds. But I am pretty disgusted by this. No, I can't. I just can't. Come on. What are we doing here? He's 58. Stop it.
It's a gimmick. It's a stunt. Would we be shocked? I mean, I'm not shocked by any Trump appointment. I won't be shocked if Mike Tyson has a complete meltdown in the ring tonight, right? And I think about it. I used to love boxing, right? I've said it before. My favorite sporting event I ever attended was I was lucky enough to see Hagler Leonard in a parking lot in Vegas, and that buzz in that made-up parking lot stadium was better than any buzz ever felt. I can think of dozens of Tyson fights I watched. I still remember I was calling CBA basketball, and I'm at a bar with Flip Saunders, Kevin McKenna, and Trey Schwab in Santa Barbara. Great town to have a CBA team, by the way, Santa Barbara. Watching the Tyson-Douglas meltdown, watching the two Holyfield fights, watching when he came back, post one fight. Broke my back, and Larry Merchant goes, where? Spinal. I mean, just, the the rape charges, the other controversies. I mean, he was must pay attention, and a lot of times you're cringing while you're paying attention.
I think as far as athletes go of all time, it has to be top five most exciting to watch because just anything could happen and how explosive it was and how quick it was. I saw this clown that he's fighting saying something like, "Oh, I'll fight him in any era."
Yeah,
no, you'd be dead. You would be absolutely dead if you fought him in his best stage of his career. But he's just become an odd character in the world. Like, he owned a weed company and did a podcast where he smoked pot and talked to people. It's just like, and then even the thing, everyone was laughing about it, but the bizarre answer that he gave to some
Legacy.
Little girl interview. Whose idea was it to have a little girl interview Mike Tyson? Did you Wikipedia him before you did that? Are you insane? This is a total clown show.
I did react. By the way, yeah, I did react to Jake Paul's comment saying, I just tweeted this out during our break. I was a better golfer than Tiger in his prime. I mean, if we're just gonna throw out nonsense, I can do it too. You know?
Yeah. I got married in Santa Barbara.
Oh, not a bad place. Not a bad place. All right, sir.
The wife is on TV, by the way. The wife is on TV tonight. FS2. She's calling a basketball game. So if anyone wants to watch real sports, and not utter nonsense.
Which game?
DePaul and someone.
Okay. Got it. I'll look for that before the shenanigans later. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Chad.
Caller with us. Am I Wrong? Next.